Come back to church. Your home is waiting for you.
Hi there, it's WAMC News Director Ian Pickus, and on this episode of the WAMC News Podcast, we meet the 10th Bishop of the Roman Catholic Diocese, who's being installed today. A self-described extrovert with a following for his YouTube videos and a new book, the Most Reverend William Byrne, who is 56, will oversee the four Western Massachusetts counties with a Catholic population of about 230,000. WAMC's Pioneer Valley Bureau Chief Paul Tuthill spoke with Byrne about his life and his vision.
What do you want the people of the Diocese of Springfield to know about you?
That I am a priest who loves being a priest. And I love my faith and I love our church. And that I am a pastor who believes that our experience should be one of good news and joy. And so I'm a chronically hopeful person.
Why did you become a priest?
Well, I mean, the initial thing is that I believe God called me to be a priest. But I also became a priest because I felt the call to bring healing to people who are wounded. I was raised loving the faith and knowing that that the message made a huge difference in my own personal life and the capacity to share that with others and to walk the journey. One of the magnificent things about being a priest is that you are with people at each stage of their life. You are there when they baptize their baby and when you marry the couple and they are burying a loved one. It's the gift of being able to be present to people in every aspect of their lives in a very privileged and beautiful way.
And when did you get the calling to become a priest?
Well, I was a senior at Holy Cross in Worcester when I was thinking seriously about it. And I went to my parents and told them that I was thinking about being a priest. And my mother said, you know, I would love to have a son who's a priest. I'd hate to have one that used to be a priest. And so she said, you should do something you've never done before. And I was sort of imagining myself sailing across the Atlantic or spelunking or something like that. And I said, like what, Mom? And she said, get a job. So I did. I taught school for 3 years, three really happy years. And the urge got stronger, and I knew I had to go and explore it. One of the things about pursuing a vocation is you shouldn't enter seminary knowing for sure that that's what God wants you to do, because then you won't be open to hearing and discerning God's call. So the purpose of seminary is to confirm what God's really asking you to do, whether that be to be a priest or to pursue a married vocation or whatever the Lord's calling you to do. So.
And you went to seminary in Rome, right?
I did, yes. I studied at a place called the Pontifical North American College, which is the seminary owned or run by the U.S. bishops. And it's right next to the St. Peter's Square. It's an incredible privilege to be able to study close to the Pope and to have a global, universal vision of Catholicism.
And after you were ordained, you spent most of your time in the Washington, D.C. area?
Exclusively. So I was a priest of the Archdiocese of Washington, which is the District of Columbia and then the five surrounding counties. And I was a parochial vicar for a few years, which means an assistant pastor in two parishes, and then was sent to the University of Maryland as the chaplain there, which is a lot like UMass, a big state school with a vibrant energy. So that was a wonderful time.
What in your experiences up till now has prepared you to be Bishop of the Springfield Diocese?
Well, my assignments after the University of Maryland, I was then at St. Peter's on Capitol Hill. So in my time there, it was an urban parish in a neighborhood that was changing but had yet to change. So there was both a gentrification, but then also the issues of poverty that you meet face to face when you're in a city parish. And I also had the privilege of working with members of the Congress and with their staff. The House of Representatives actually sits in that parish. So I did a special ministry to Catholic members of Congress, and we would have dinner once a month, whoever wanted to show up. And then I was in a big suburban parish with a school and the varying needs of people. And then during the pandemic, it sort of forced us all to branch out into new ways of preaching the gospel. And that ended up for me being on the internet and in YouTube videos and things like that. So I think the Lord's provided me with a rich experience. And that's why I think he's called me to, with great joy in my heart, to come to Western Massachusetts.
We'll come back to the internet presence. Let's talk about this diocese. Over the last couple of decades, it's shrunk in the sense that churches have closed, parishes have merged, schools have closed. It doesn't sound like a recipe for success.
I think it's the perfect recipe for success. I think that it's an incredible opportunity. You know, what's radical in the world today? I think Jesus Christ and the gospel is radical. A message of selfless love, of self-gift, of that hate will never win, love will always conquer. That's a radical message in a time that we need to hear it desperately. So I am not discouraged by a downward trend in the last couple years because it also presents an incredible opportunity as a new generation comes forward who hasn't really heard the message. So it's very much sort of like one of the early apostles stepping off into one of these cities where the like Corinth or where the gospel and the good news hasn't been heard, where love hasn't been preached. And so I find it exciting.
How are the finances of the diocese?
Well, I've only been here for 2 days actually in Springfield. So I can't really speak to that in any depth. I'll be happy to circle back with you once I have a chance, but I'm trying to figure out where things go in my drawers when getting ready for the ordination next week.
The annual Catholic Appeal reported doing quite well in its collections, even though church attendance has been very limited because of the pandemic.
Right, and my experience, at least in my own parish back in Washington, was that people did actually step up. They understood the needs, and the pastors of, and I know in Springfield, have done the Diocese of Springfield in Western Massachusetts have really done an exceptional job of keeping communities together in many ways. Towns and parishes, and have been able to sort of garner that sense of community from which generosity flows.
Parochial schools in Massachusetts have seen an increase in enrollment, attributed by many to the fact that public schools, for the most part, have not had much in-person education. It's either been all remote or it's been some hybrid part-time model. Do you think those enrollment gains at the parochial schools can be sustained once we get back to whatever normal looks like?
Yeah, well, I'm a firm believer that we're not getting back to normal, Paul. We're going to get back to better. And it's been a line that I've used, but I use it from my heart. The education that we're able to provide is for the whole child. It's not just a mind and body, but it's a mind, body, spirit. And also the sense of community engendered by a small Catholic school or a medium Catholic school and the excellence of our teachers. You know, our teachers who have been going back in, putting themselves at risk to go back into the classroom, are doing it because they love the kids, but also because there's a sense of mission. And I think that sense of mission, the sense of we don't have to pray, but rather we get to pray together and with each other and play and work hard and be good people together is tangible. And I'm a firm believer that once families make that sacrifice and realize it's not just about getting their kid back in classroom, but the difference that that Catholic school classroom makes in the life of their child, I think we're going to see continued growth.
Your ordination ceremony Monday is by invitation only, and I read that you have invited some clergy sex abuse survivors to attend. What's the message you're hoping to convey with that?
So we have very limited space because of the COVID restrictions, but what I think this is showing is that healing, and especially healing of those who have experienced the hideous abuse that has been at the hands of the church's ministers, that healing needs to be a top priority for us all. And so my extension of an invitation is not, I hope, to be seen as some sort of checking a box, but rather to say, you are my priority, and I am sorry for the victims and the victimization, and that whatever we can do to bring healing to those individuals, to their families, to their friends, because it's not just a one person devastation, it rocks a whole community. And I think the tragedy that we've seen in the last few years, as we've seen a systemic, we witnessed a systemic issue in the past, was that when people were trying to keep this below the radar, they were hoping to avoid scandal, and what they did was just break beneath the surface so that the sense of unity, so that when it really did come to light, we recognized a devastation that had happened through our silence and our lack of communication and our lack of transparency. And we need to commit ourselves, me as the shepherd of this diocese, but especially all of us as believers and professors of God's love, that healing love is what we need to make a priority.
As bishop, how involved are you going to be directly in the diocese response to any future sex abuse allegations?
I am not bishop yet, but I already am very much involved. You know, the vast majority of cases tend to be from farther back, but that doesn't mean that the healing doesn't need to happen. And we did a survey of the diocese before I was even announced, before I even knew. And the two messages that came through loud and clear from all the people that generously took the time to fill this out was that we needed transparency and communication. And those two are crucial to how I think we need to move forward. And so I've already instructed our staff to start preparing so that we can begin to release the names, so that we will have transparency, and we're reviewing those and making sure that we do it in a way that doesn't just drop a bomb, but actually we have the outreach to those who are survivors, the pastoral tools necessary to help them, and also to be prepared to support the good work of so many holy and kind, good priests who have done nothing but beautiful service in their ministry, and yet are somehow tainted and besmirched by these few who cause so much damage. So that transparency and communication, we're already working on that, and I'm not even bishop yet, but it's a priority of mine.
You're going to be getting a report from a task force that was assembled by your predecessor to recommend changes in the way the diocese handles clergy sex abuse allegations. Do you have any indication as to how soon you're going to get that report?
I don't know the timeline, but I know the work is ongoing, and it's ongoing with a sense of urgency. So I can't speak to the exact time, but it's a priority of mine to make sure that it happens sooner than later.
You are a well-known internet presence as a result of a series of YouTube videos you produced that you've now turned into a book. Tell us about that. How did all that start?
Well, they started as a series of articles called Five Things, and they were in our local Catholic newspaper in Washington, the Catholic Standard. And then once people, I heard the response, people liked them because they're very approachable. The book is called Five Things with Father Bill, Hope, Humor, and Help for the Soul. And people find them. They speak to the truths of the faith. They are theological in nature, but I believe that God speaks in all things. I actually have a whole theory behind this that I'll share with you. Gary Marshall was the producer of Happy Days and Laverne and Shirley, and I was reading in his obituary about how he said that he thought life was school, and that his shows he wanted to be recess. And I'm a firm believer that I think we've turned church into school when it should be recess. And recess, all the studies show that if kids don't have recess, they don't learn. It's the time to fill your lungs with fresh air and recharge yourself and go out and play with your friends. And that's what our faith experience should be. And I wanted to highlight that for people, that our faith should be recess. It should be rejuvenation. It should be life-giving. And it should be joyful and fun. So the topics include things like five things I learned from my dog, or five things I learned from my puppy, or five gifts that you should give your parents on graduation. Just things of everyday life.
But there's a serious message you're looking to convey.